Sometime within the next 2 weeks, the country of Israel will engage in a prisoner swap, which would be unthinkable to most people in the United States. Of course, the two countries are in very different situations. The Israelis will be releasing Lebanese man Samir Kutar, who has sat in an Israeli prison for 27 years for the murder of three Israeli civilians, including a four-year-old girl. In exchange, Hezbollah guerrillas based in Lebanon will return the two Israeli soldiers they kidnapped 2 years ago, incidents which set off a month-long war. To be accurate, it is most likely that Israel will actually be getting the remains of the two soldiers. Prime Minister Ehud Olmert said so explicitly in announcing the deal. The prime minister and the defense minister voted in their cabinet 22-3 to trade the prisoners, Samir Kutar, along with four other Lebanese militants, for Ehud Goldwasser and Eldad Regav, who are the two Israeli soldiers. To discuss this and the entire concept of trading prisoners, two groups, in this case, one group that the United States deems a terrorist organization, is Michael Oren, who is a senior fellow at the Shalom Center in Jerusalem, a visiting professor at Georgetown, the author of A History of the 6 Days War, and more recently of Power, Faith, and Fantasy, America in the Middle East, 1776 to present. Hello, Mr. Oren.
Mike, how are you?
I'm well. It seems, I have to say, it seems strategically, from afar perhaps, to be a very bad deal for Israel, especially if Israel is trying to demonstrate backbone in future negotiations with other groups who are deemed terrorist groups, because Hamas is holding an Israeli soldier named Gilad Shalit, and it's believed he's still living. So wouldn't Hamas take all the wrong lessons away from this, or am I missing some major aspect of strategy?
Well, not just Hamas, Mike, the entire region, whether it be Iran, Syria, are going to look at this deal and conclude that Israel has not shown a tremendous amount of backbone here. In fact, Israel, by releasing convicted terrorists, is in essence incentivizing future terrorists to conduct future raids against Israel. It's also actually reducing the incentive to terrorists to keep Israeli prisoners alive. If Israel is willing to give up live terrorists for dead Israeli soldiers, what's the message? Beyond that, releasing terrorists also endangers Israeli lives in the future. Of roughly 80% of the terrorists Israel has released to date have been involved in terrorist attacks over the last 3 years. Some 177 Israelis have died in those attacks. And there's also the question of an internal Israeli issue of the Israeli court system, which sentenced these terrorists to life imprisonment, and sometimes multiple terms of life imprisonment, and the Israeli government has overturned that. So these are very serious messages that are sent to Israel's enemies in the region and can certainly strengthen them in the future.
So something profound must be going on currently with the Israeli psyche. What is it, if they would allow, in fact, demand such a thing to happen?
Well, this is the other side of the coin. Israel is a society which is closely linked to Western culture. It's a Jewish state. Every life is precious to this country. It's a very small country. Everybody knows prisoners who have fallen in battle, who have soldiers who have been fallen in battle, who have been taken prisoner in battle. There's a strong sense also that Israel has a citizens' army, and which all of us serve. I'm speaking now as a veteran of that army, as a father of soldiers in that army. We all have to know that should we fall captive on the field of battle, that our country will do everything in its power to secure our release. So on one hand, Israel is caught with being this Western Jewish state, very concerned with human values and the value of human life. On the other, we're living in a very tumultuous, very dangerous Middle East, in which we have to be cautious about the message we send to our enemies.
Sure, but valuing life and a citizen's army, that's been true throughout Israel's 60 years of existence. It was smaller even back then, and you wrote the history of the war 41 years ago, the 6 Days War. What's changed recently?
Well, this has been a trend post-67. In the 67 war, Mike, Israel captured about 11,000 Egyptians and exchanged them for about 10 Israeli soldiers who had been captive. So there's always been that lopsided sort of arithmetic in prisoner exchanges. But starting in the 1980s, Israel engaged, as our enemies changed from being Arab states to terrorist organizations, Israel engaged in exchanges with these terrorist organizations, beginning in perhaps the biggest biggest exchange in 1984 with the Ahmed Jibril organization, in which Israel exchanged over 4,000 detainees for five Israeli soldiers who had been held prisoner there. And that really set a new precedent that has continued to this day.
Here's Israel's interior minister, Meir Shatrit. He voted for the deal. He was one of the 22. Here was his reasoning.
I'm totally agree to this deal which is done. I think it is our commitment to bring back every soldier, wherever he is. And in not doing it, it's like we are deleting our commitment.
So he was saying, he was echoing what you said. Is it a change in the? I know that Israel in the war that in the month long war of 2 years ago with Lebanon, they were very dissatisfied with how that worked out, and it hurt public opinion. But is there a sense that the nature of Israel has really changed, that even defending its borders won't be something that it won't be as committed to in the future?
No, I think that that hasn't changed for the very simple reason that we have no choice. We have terrorist organizations operating on many of our borders now. We have Iranian proxies in Lebanon, in Syria, in the Gaza Strip in the form of Hamas, and Hamas power is escalating in the West Bank as well, so we may have Hamas to our west. I think Israel has no choice but to defend itself against these terrorist threats, and I think that Israel has exhibited immense, in fact, almost superhuman restraint in not firing back massively at the Qassam rocket fire that has come out in southern Israel from Gaza. But I think Israel's patience is limited, Mike, and if that ceasefire doesn't hold, ceasefire achieved recently indirectly between Israel and Hamas, that Israel will act militarily on a large scale to stop that rocket fire.
I want to ask you to just stay with us for a moment because I want to bring it to the United States and its history. And we're speaking with Michael Oren about the Israel prisoner exchange on the Bryant Park Project for NPR News. Stay with us, Michael. Welcome back to the Bryant Park Project from NPR News, and we are speaking with Michael Oren, who is an author and a historian. He's at the Shalom Center in Jerusalem right now, also teaches at Georgetown. And the issue is the recently voted on exchange where Israel will be getting presumably the remains of two soldiers, and in exchange they will be giving Samir Kutar, a few other convicted guerrillas or militants, and they'll be doing a prisoner exchange. Now, what this brings up is nothing so much as the famous phrase, we do not negotiate with terrorists. The United States has said this for a long time, but in your book, you say that the United States has negotiated with terrorists. In fact, it goes far back as the Barbary Pirates. Can you tell us a little of the history of the United States negotiating with terrorists or the equivalent back then, hundreds of years ago?
Well, my book, Power, Faith, and Fantasy, opens on July 4th, 1776, when America declares its independence from Great Britain and thus becomes really alone in fighting a Middle East enemy. Before 1736, America had been under the protection of the British Navy in confronting Middle Eastern terrorists from the so-called Barbary states, what is today Morocco, Tunisia, Algeria, and Libya. And these terrorists, basically sponsoring states, were sending pirate ships out into the Mediterranean to attack American ships, to plunder their cargoes, to capture their crews. By the 1780s, there were about 127 American hostages in the Middle East. America was facing its first hostage crisis there, and America had to decide whether to follow the age-old European custom of bribing these pirates and paying ransom, or standing up and fighting the pirates. And a great number of the founding fathers, led by John Adams, was in favor of following the European precedent of paying off the pirates. But Thomas Jefferson really stood up alone and said, no, Americans are different than Europeans. America to preserve not only its commerce, not only to preserve its security, but also to preserve its honor, had to fight back. And so Jefferson, when he became president, fought back, and Jefferson employed a combination of military force and diplomatic tactics. He sent troops into what is today Libya. That's the Marines who marched to the shores of Tripoli in the Marine Anthem, and they were able to attack the terrorist bases from behind. But before he actually conquered the terrorist bases, Jefferson turned around and negotiated a deal with the Libyans. So Jefferson provides a paradigm not only for standing up and fighting terrorists, but also for for negotiating with them and concluding deals at a critical time.
So, and that final deal that he negotiated, did that work out for the United States?
It worked out for the United States briefly. America found itself back at war with the Libyans in 1815. Some of your listeners may recall the name Stephen Decatur, for whom about 30 cities and towns in the United States are named. He sailed the fleet into Tripoli Harbor, into Algiers and Tunis Harbor, and vanquished those pirates finally at Cannon Point.
So for 200 years, has United States policy been to say one thing and then at least consider the other?
Well, I think that the nature of terrorism has very much changed. Today we have terrorists who are not operating within a state framework, even though they may at some point receive some state backing. You have organizations like Al-Qaeda, like Hamas, Muslim Brotherhood, Islamic Jihad, who are free-floating in the world, and it's very difficult to locate a headquarters and sometimes even locate a leadership for them. And so the United States has to really develop a new paradigm for dealing with what is a 21st century threat.
All right. Michael Oren, Senior Fellow at the Shalem Center in Jerusalem, and author of 6 Days of War and Power, Faith, and Fantasy, America in the Middle East, 1776 to Present. Thank you for that.
Thank you, Mike.